You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Voney, your host. So nice to have you with us this evening. Yes, there's a lot of debate going back and forth in this country. A lot of people would say we're really in a situation that we've never been before. I don't necessarily agree with that, but nonetheless, there are so many different opinions and people feeling different thoughts about what's happening in this country, whether it's about the government or whether it's military, whether it's the our courts, and that's all well and good. That's what makes this country great. But sometimes you just need to kind of pull it all together and get a sense of what's really happening. And my guest this week is Harvard Law School professor Alex Whiting. He's a contributor to a new book, America Unfinished: 250 Years of Law and Governance. This book I really enjoyed reading. As I said, it's a compilation of 60 of the faculty members of Harvard Law who have contributed essays. In this case, Alex specializing in international law, and we'll be talking to him for the next half hour and getting his sense on how the rest of the world views the United States. Alex, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is, some people say, I've never seen that this country is turned upside down. We've had conflict since day one. I tend to be somewhat of a history buff, and you go back to the Revolutionary War, you go back to the Civil War, you go back to World War I, World War II, the Korean War, so on and so forth, Vietnam. We've always had ebbs and flows in this country. Maybe because of social media and the various opinions, there's so many more people able to put forth their thoughts and whatnot. But let me ask you directly. One, why did you contribute to America Unfinished? What drew you to this particular project?
Well, it was a project, as you said, of the Harvard Law faculty, and we all wanted to comment on the state of the law in our particular areas at the 250th anniversary. And my area, as you mentioned, is international law, specifically international criminal law. I practice as a prosecutor in The Hague at several international tribunals, and it's what I specialize on at the Harvard Law School. And so my piece, the thing I wanted to talk about is where we are with respect to international criminal law and enforcement. And the point I make in the piece is that, the United States was the leader in establishing accountability for international crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, crime of aggression. We led the way from Nuremberg through the Yugoslavia tribunals and Rwanda and so forth. And even with the International Criminal Court, we're not a member of the International Criminal Court, but we have made huge contributions even to that court. And now we're in a different posture, and we are turning our backs on accountability in lots of different ways, both in the front end about trying to prevent atrocities and crimes, and then on the back end, accountability for those crimes. So that's what I wrote about that turn in the posture of the United States towards accountability for international crimes.
You mentioned, because I think it was a major platform, for lack of a better term, the Nuremberg trials shortly after World War II. People had strong emotions about those part of the Nazi Party taking part in World War II, especially against the Jewish people, et cetera, and but now we move forward to the year 2026, and as you've said, people, especially internationally, it's not just here. We hear criticisms for and against the government, for and against the courts, and whatnot. But what today has preceded a sense of people feeling that this country no longer looks upon their neighbors, whether it's Europe or any place else, in a helpful, or supportive manner. I get the sense from people that I talk to that, you know, the United States is turning their back on so many nations. Why do people feel that way? Is that really what's happening?
Yeah, I do. I think that is really what's happening. I think the rest of the world just doesn't think it's the entire country and understands that there are many Americans who embrace other countries, other people, and international relations and healthy international relations and international law. But this administration has certainly turned against international institutions, international relations, international agreements, and has really broken the international order, the rules order that has prevailed since World War II. And as you said in your open, and you're absolutely right, that this is not the first time that the United States has been in conflict with the rest of the world, or not maybe the rest of the world, but particular parts of the world. It's not the first time that we've had conflict and disagreement within the country about our role in the world. But what's different this time is that the United States, until the last couple of years, was really played an important role since World War II in keeping the international order. It played a leading role sometimes with other major powers, and then since the fall of the Soviet Union, really almost on its own. And now the administration, the government, has turned away from that, breaking relations with, or let's say degrading relations with, some of its most important allies, cozying up to certain countries and leaders that we've long considered to be antagonistic to the interests of this country. And so there is a real breakdown in that. And, in the area I focus on, international criminal accountability, the country, the government has taken a dramatic turn against accountability, having pioneered accountability and been a leader in accountability, both at Nuremberg and at the modern international tribunals. Now the government has pledged to dismantle brick by brick the International Criminal Court and has imposed sanctions on people who work there. And it has also reduced our own commitment to following international law and avoiding the unnecessary death of civilians, for example, in the conflict in Iran and in other places. So this is a very dramatic turn against a long tradition in the United States of aligning ourselves to international law during times of conflict.
I want to set some possibilities as to why that is happening, but I do want to just take a quick pause to remind our listeners, especially those of you who are just tuning in, that this is 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona. This is The Public Eye. My guest this week is Harvard Law School professor Alex Whiting. He's a contributor to the new book, America Unfinished, 250 Years of Law and Governance, a unique publication, 60 of the Harvard Law School faculty contributing essays in various areas. In this case, Alex Whiting specializing in international criminal law. Alex, with what you just said, and I think I think most people are on board with that. But let me throw something out there that may have set the precedent here. Terrorism. I'm not saying that terrorism didn't exist 50 years ago. I guess you could call Nazi Germany part of that. You could call, Japan during World War II. People would point to that. But after 9/11, I think I see people I talk to in general on a daily basis. After 9/11, there seemed to be a shift in many Americans' minds we can't trust anybody anymore. We've got to be very cautious. We've got to look after ourselves first and foremost. Does that make any sense as to why You know, currently this country, as you said, perhaps has turned their backs and you know, not seen what's really going on and didn't pursue, you know, the way that they did in the past. Does that hold any validity?
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. Before getting into that, I would say, well, to get into that, let's, you know, when 9/11 happened, you know, let's remember that not after 9/11 happened, all of our allies came to our support and joined a coalition to fight terrorism and to fight Al-Qaeda. And it's the first and only time that the collective defense provision of NATO has been implemented, has been activated. And so, you know, the 9/11 and post-9/11 also showed the strength and the importance of international relations, alliances, how important it is to work with other countries. And but where I think you're onto something is that after 9/11, the country has engaged in a number of conflicts in Iraq, in Afghanistan, now in Iran, that have focused on military solutions to you know, conflict in the world, instability, to the causes and sources of terrorism against terrorist groups. And I think what we have found again and again is that those military solutions are by themselves insufficient, and we get caught, we get stuck in these endless wars. And part of what Trump ran on and part of his appeal, and I completely understand the draw of this and in many ways support it, was putting an end to these endless wars. And that was, in a way, that you might say that was a kind of pulling back from engagement in the world, but a particular kind of engagement. And if you're going to pull back from that, and I think that's right, to pull back from sole reliance on military solutions, you need to do something else. You need to have other kinds of measures, other kinds of international efforts that are going to, whether it's diplomacy, economic aid, sanctions, other kinds of efforts that are going to try to manage conflict in the world and try to protect our national security around the world. And I think the thing that we've seen again and again is that the United States cannot do that alone. It needs allies to do that. It needs to do that collectively. And what's the problem with the approach right now is that we're degrading that collective approach. We're either trying to do it on our own and failing, or now, ironically, the administration has actually turned back to military solutions in Venezuela, in Iran, and we see ourselves once again stuck in an endless war. So there's been a lot of, I think what we've seen in the last 2 years is a lot of tearing down of the way things were done internationally for the United States. But nothing has been put in its place that's very effective, that has any promise for dealing with the problems, the international problems, the problems that the world faces, that need to be addressed by collective efforts by the United States and its allies.
I think most people would certainly agree with that. We have taken more of a militaristic stance against any type of aggressor. Maybe feelings of vulnerability. I don't know for sure. But one thing I wanted to, you know, ask you, because you know better than anyone, people would say, well, you know, this country was built on a set of rules and laws. You know, we expect that among our own citizens. We expect that among, you know, neighboring partners, whether they're allies or whatnot. And we hope that, you know, we can formulate those laws as an international policy. I get the sense that perhaps we have taken the stance we've taken because other countries have not, you know, taken a stand and said, you know, you're right. You know, we either want to be an ally or we you know, we are an ally. We've got these terrorist cells, or we've got these problems going on within our own country. And we're going to, through diplomacy, through our laws, international laws especially, we're going to take control of that. Is it possible that we've taken a different view because other countries haven't lived up to their responsibility?
Well, sure. I mean, there's no question that when you follow the rule of law, whether that's, you know, within the United States, domestically or internationally, you're going to encounter people who don't follow the rule of law, who don't join you in that effort, who break the law, and who sometimes profit by it and succeed by it and gain advantage over and sometimes over you, but because they haven't followed the rule of law. Analogize, you see that at home, right? I'm sure that, you know, the vast majority, if not all your listeners, follow the rules, follow the law, and that's important to them as they live their daily lives. And we all encounter people who don't do that and who make more money from it or take advantage or get things because they break the rules. The answer can't be that we say, okay, well, forget about the rule of law. We're going to, like, if some people are going to break the rule of law, we should all break the rule of law. Let's throw it out the window and we'll descend. We can't descend to their, to their approach. And that's true internationally, true also. If the United States and its allies that have been traditionally committed to a rules-based order internationally and rules and laws and following the laws and insisting on accountability for violations of the law, which is always imperfect. Like, everyone points examples where that's not done, but if there's still that fundamental commitment, if the United States and its allies give up on that because there are countries that don't follow the rules of law and break them, then the world is in grave peril, because then it's every country for itself. The conflicts will multiply, and it will be impossible for the world to address some of the most grave problems facing us today if we can't find ways to do that internationally. So that's a road that it may be that is what's happening, but that's a road to real disaster.
To clarify, I think that it would be helpful to listeners. We know that here domestically, whether it's locally, whether it's, you know, cities and towns within Massachusetts or anywhere in the country, that laws are legislated on a daily basis. As you said, for you know, just to keep everybody hopefully following the law so that we have a better quality of life. But when it comes to international, you know this better than anyone. When allies get together, the United States gets together with its allies. I assume that each country, those who represent the various countries, get together and decide that X amount of laws would play out for all those who belong to this international group, and it's expected that each country would follow along with that. Is that how it plays out? I mean, as you're talking about, we need some sense of order. So when the United States in the past and their allies got together and put together a set of international laws, and for the most part, we hope that each country would respect and obey those laws. It would seem that would certainly make sense, but is that how it all comes together, that each country sits with each partner in deciding what laws would make sense, in unifying these countries?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm really glad you asked that, because people today often say, well, there is really no such thing as international law. How can you have international law? And it's true that that unlike in our domestic system, in the state of Massachusetts or the federal government or our towns, there is no international legislature. There's no international police force. There is the United Nations, but it's not the same thing. And so international law is created and enforced in a different way. It's created in, there are two different ways it gets created. The first way is what you were just alluding to, which is countries get together and they make agreements and they make treaties. And there are thousands of international treaties that are among some are signed by virtually every country in the world, the UN Charter, for example, and some are signed by just, you know, different groups, right? And that depending on what it is. And so that there's a whole web of international law that's created through treaties and agreements and so forth. And then the second way is there is what's called customary international law, which is if countries follow a certain practice, and even though they don't have explicit agreements, but they follow a certain practice and certain understandings about what's lawful and not lawful, that becomes part of custom. And for example, you cannot intentionally target civilians. You can't massacre. That's against the international law. And it's customary international law that you can't do that. There are also treaties, but it's custom. And those are the ways that the laws are created, and they're enforced sometimes by the United Nations, sometimes by international institutions. Oftentimes they're enforced by countries coming together and enforcing rule breakers, enforcing sanctions against rule breakers with either economic sanctions, diplomatic pressure, diplomatic isolation. We've seen that with Russia, for example, in the war in Ukraine, sanctions, isolation, and so forth. That's how they're trying to enforce the rules. Sometimes enforced with military force or with criminal sanctions, criminal prosecutions of individuals who have broken international law. That's been my career. So international law is a real thing. It operates in a different way. Of course, just like in domestic law, there you can point to examples where the law's been broken, even examples where it's been broken and people have gotten away with it, or it's imperfectly enforced. But it nonetheless is an important factor, important force in constraining countries and guiding countries and trying to maintain order in the world and create a basis for countries to be able to function and have security and stability and strong economies and so forth. It is the kind of foundation for countries to be able to thrive and relate with one another, just like it is domestically among in our towns and states and federal government.
You know, we've got a few moments left, and in following with what you just said, I get the sense that, you know, I know right here in the city of Worcester or Worcester County, a crime is committed. You know, the police, the state police, investigators, the DA's office will go right into it, and people, I think to this day, I mean, there's always going to be naysayers, but I think most people feel confident and comfortable, that justice will be done. I just wonder when it comes to a global, a global stance. We all agree, the allies all get together and they agree to follow certain laws. But I just wonder, Alex, if especially the American public feels a lack of confidence that, okay, if a terror cell should start in whatever country it may be, I don't want to point fingers at anybody, and that government is not doing enough to, especially by abiding by the international laws and not doing their point, why should we play by the rules as well? Does that make any sense, that some countries just don't take a strong enough stance and that causes a lack of confidence?
Yeah, I understand the point about the lack of confidence and people's uncertainty about the law and abiding by the law. But there are times when countries or terrorist groups threaten U.S. security in a way that military force is required to protect U.S. security. Completely agree with that and understand that, and that's important. But the law also serves an important function in helping to counter terrorism. And terrorism is a version, is a one type of violation of international laws around warfare and around targeting of civilians. And the law plays an important part both domestically and internationally. Mm-hmm. Domestically, we've prosecuted many terrorists or wannabe terrorists, people caught before they've committed an act of terrorism on the verge of committing it. We've used the law effectively to target those people and prosecute them. And internationally, we've done that. The law has been was used, and this is a new and growing effort. Started with Nuremberg, and then in the 90s, we had other tribunals for Yugoslavia, Rwanda, Cambodia, Sierra Leone, Kosovo. Now we have the International Criminal Court. It's a new effort to try to use the law, not solely the law, though sometimes other things are necessary, but the law is an important component in trying to target leaders, political leaders, military leaders, terrorists who violate the international laws and commit international atrocities and to make them individually responsible. And that the, what we should be doing is not becoming cynical about the rule of law, but try to find ways to enforce it and strengthen it,
right?
And make it effective around the world. Yeah. And when the United States has done that, when it has committed to it, it has been successful. It's been able to do that in many conflicts. But it is an important component because it is what makes us better than the rule breakers, better than the terrorists. It is what makes the world better, is if we can show a commitment to the rule of law. And it is ultimately what will bring us to stability and some kind of peace if that is a component of our international strategy.
And I think most people would agree with you because it has worked. We've seen it work. And if everybody's on the same page and working in the same for the same goals, then we should absolutely see positive results. It's not always perfect. But as you said, to deviate from anything other than following along with international law, where we cooperate rather than go our own separate ways, can only wreak havoc, as they say. Alex, real quickly, obviously the book is out, widely available, America Unfinished, 250 Years of Law and Governance, Alex Whiting being one of the contributors. Alex, if people want to get more information about your background and so on and so forth, perhaps even pose questions to you, how might they reach you?
Yeah, so I would recommend for more information, look at Just Security. It's a blog that touches on national security, international law, international accountability. I write for the blog. And, of course, I'm here at Harvard Law School if people want to reach out to me. I really recommend the book. My colleagues have written some great essays. And it's a terrific book.
Yeah, it really is. And you don't have to be, I think Alex would agree, you don't have to be a law school graduate to understand it. It's very user-friendly. Kind of bridging many areas, both history and modern times, what's happening now. And each person, I always enjoy that myself. Different opinions, I think you can gain something by that. And in this case, 60 contributors to the book America Unfinished. Again, I want to thank my guest this week, Harvard Law Professor Alex Whiting. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. Always welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.